noticed how modest I am. We're going to start here at 12 o'clock. We're going to bring out all the talkers, the American talkers. We have a Yank. There's an American talker. Yes. What about it? Oh, the high-diving dogs, which is equivalent to the high-diving mules, metaphorically speaking, of course. See, they're just testing me. I don't know. They want me to talk in this thing. Yes. Are you capturing this on tape? Good. I was hungry, so the curtain came down with a roll. At 12 o'clock sharp, we're going to do our thing. Is there any way... they can hear me out there. Dollar, young man. Hold that for a second. Thank you. The second's up. Now watch this carefully. Moving close. Now this trick was taught to me by an old Chinese magician by the name of Hung Won. His brother was Hung Too. He died. A very clever chap. Now watch the dollar. Watch my hands. Watch what I'm going to do. I had the pleasure of doing this particular feat of magic in Washington, D.C. before the presidents of the United Underwear Company. Now watch this carefully. You're going to take the dollar bill. Now moving close so you can see this. Every move is a work of art. You don't have to get that close, kid. Watch this. Watch what we're going to. Bring out the snake charmer. Bring out the fire eater. And bring out the Australian whipcrackers. Will you ever see an Australian whip? Amazing act. Watch this. Never had one, but it was good. Watch the dollar. Move over this way so you can see. I want to get the biggest tip I ever had here. We're going to turn you into the show in a few minutes, and it's going to be reasonable. Watch this. You know what? This is amazing. Watch the dollar. We take the dollar bill, we wrap it around once. Now watch. Wrap it around twice. Watch my fingers. At no time during the performance do my fingers ever leave my hands, which actually makes this a miracle. Watch this carefully. Every move is a work of art. Ah, yes. It's all done with Christian Science and rubber bands. Now watch. You know what that means, kid? Good. Keep eating the peach. Watch this. Now watch the dollar bill. Can you all see it? Move over this way, lady. You'll be able to see better. You people way in the back, gather down close because I'm going to bring out the snake charmer. She's going to bring out that 12-foot boa constrictor snake. And when she brings that out with it wrapped around her neck, it'll send chills up and down your spine. That's true. Watch this, kid. You don't think so, kid? Just like the regular crowds I've been working to. Now watch this. Now watch what we're going to do. We're going to place the dollar bill. Now, most people don't know how this is done. Now, this is a fascinating way of doing it. Watch what we're going to do. This is supposed to be a narrative. I don't know what a narrative is. I never went to narrative school. Now, watch this. Now, watch this. Now, watch the dollar. Can you all see the dollar bill? Now, that's important. You folks over there moving. Can you see it? You can. Good. That's great. Can you bring out some more of the entertainers, please? Bring out the sword swallower. Bring out the fire eater. Yes, bring her out, too. That's right. Get them all out here. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is called narrative. We don't have that stuff, kid. You know that. They brought me all the way to Washington, D.C. and said, leave your show home. So now when I get to the end of it and I charge you money, you can't go anywhere. But it's okay. Watch. Watch. This is how it worked. Years ago when I was in Coney Island, I started in Coney Island as a kid. How old are you, kid? 9. I was a little older than that. Watch this. I was 13 when I started in Hubert's Museum on 42nd Street. On 42nd Street, they had a place called, it was down in a basement, and they had fire eaters, they had sword swallowers, magicians, and they also had the flea circus. I don't know if you've ever seen a flea circus, but there are such things. And I was about 13 years old, and the first opening I ever made in my life was on a flea circus. There was a big talker by the name of Jack Elkins, a very handsome chap, and he had a big mustache, and he says, young man, you've heard this enough times. And he sat me on a ticket box and said, go ahead, you're on. So I had to make the opening. I was 13 years old. And the opening sounded similar to this. Ladies and gentlemen, you all move down close. Welcome to Hubert's Museum. I'd like to remind you at this time we're going to present none other than Professor Heckler's trained flea circus. In this enclosure, you're going to see dozens of real live trained performing fleas. Fleas that juggle, jump through hoops, play football, operate an intermediary gown. Tiny little fleas hitched to a chariot, and they actually run a race. But the most predominating feature of the entire show is little fleas dressed in costume, and they dance to the strains of music. Now, the professor is on the inside, ready and waiting to give a performance. Now, there is a small admission. I don't apologize for it. It's only 9 cents. Fleas that juggle jumped, and everybody give you 9 cents. Now, in those days, I had difficulty making change. If somebody come up and asked for 6 tickets and gave me a dollar, I was in trouble. But nevertheless, I figured it out as I got older. And then they go in, and then you say, that's all, professor. You close the door, and you scoop up the change and put it in the bag. And later on, you went in and gave it to Roy Heckler. And If I could get somebody... Sir, excuse me, with the blue jacket on. Young man, you, right there. You see that orange folder in there, in that box? Could you get it for me, please, like a good lad? Appreciate it. How you doing, kid? You got a good seat. I like that. Thank you. The reason I asked you to get that folder is because... watch the dollar, because I'm not finished with this yet. Watch the... You watching a dollar, kid? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I found a book. It's called Wild Tigers and Trained Fleas, and it has... I had it copied by a machine, but it gives you an idea. See, you see the little fellows there tied to the chariots, and they used to feed the... Yeah, okay, you got it now? And they used to feed the fleas on the arms. I don't know if you know that. Roy would sit there in the afternoon, smoke a big cigar, and he'd have a chain across the fleas so they couldn't jump around while he was working there. And it was interesting. The way you trained the flea is you had to put him in a tube, and the fleas would jump, you know. And they'd hit, jump and keep hitting their head on the top of this glass tube, and then they either stood still or they crawled, and that's how you started to train them. And then you would tie them to get a little wire, a very thin wire, like a singular strand out of a telephone wire. You can notice how thin that is, almost hair thin. And then you'd make a loop and stick it over the front two legs and the head. And then you just pinch it a little so the flea wouldn't get away. No desertion in the crowd, you know. You had them all there. And that's how a flea circus went. And they had the jumping flea. You'd leave a flea there and have a little hoop on the end of his finger, and he just jumped through the thing. And that's the way it went years ago. He's selling hot dogs, in case you want one. And talking about that. Now sideshows had different talks, like the one on Fat Alice. And you see here, we're inside, you're going to see Fat Alice from Dallas. She's so big and so fat, it takes four men to hug her and a boxcar to lug her. And when she starts to dance, she quivers like a bowl of your grandma's jelly on a cold, frosty morn. And if that don't make you laugh, folks, there's something wrong with your laughing apparatus. But as strange as she may be, we're going to present Kokomo the Mule Face Boy. Kokomo the Mule Face Boy, the lower jaws, the protruding teeth that look and resemble that of a mule. It's the most fascinating sight you'll ever see. You're going to see the Fire Eater, the Sword Swallowers. You're going to see Franklin Tinney, a man that was born with three legs, 16 toes, and 4 feet. That's right, you'll see him on the inside. They're all alive. Now, the price to see this show normally is $0.50, but I'll tell you, cashier, put away the 50-cent tickets. Don't sell them. Now, don't run off to Nathan's and get yourself a hot dog and come back later. You're going to be entirely too late. But for 2 minutes and 2 minutes by my watch, as long as there's a line going in, the minute the line is up, the price goes up. We're going to let everybody go in for a quarter, 25 cents. Freaks, wonders, and curiosities, the strange, the odd, the bizarre, the macabre, and the unusual. And that's how the show sort of went in those days. Any questions? I've got a question. Huh? What am I going to do with the dollar? Everybody asks that question. That's a hang-up. You do absolutely nothing with it. They find themselves halfway in, and a few people remain. What are you going to do with the dollar? I said, I did it already. I got a crowd of people. That was the trick. And that's basically what you do with the dollar. Now, if there are any things you want to know about sideshows, circus talkers, and what have you, what do you want to know, son? When is the snake girl coming in? Well, that was a hypothetical thing, see? I normally have a snake girl, but this is a set. This is not a regular sideshow. If this was a sideshow, you'd be inside already. You know what I mean? And then it'd be somebody else in there dinging you for another quarter to see how the girl went in the box. And then you'd go in the blow-off. Now, a blow-off in every circus sideshow is unusual. I don't know if I should be tipping my mitt by stapping all this stuff because I'm still in the business. But every circus sideshow had an extra room where you paid an extra quarter. The flea circus was one for 9 cents. And in the back there, we usually had something very unusual, like a headless girl or some weird thing. You always had something weird back there. An unusual attraction that was not advertised outside. And the speech in that went similar to this. Ladies and gentlemen, when you gather down close, blah, 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 you know how that goes. And they say, everything that's pictured, painted, and advertised outside, anything that the talker said you will see, you'll definitely see up here on this long elevated stage for your general admission. However, after the sword swallower is done working, we always have an intermission. We take this time and opportunity to present our annex attraction. While you're on the other side of that curtain, there will be no show out here until you come out. You come out the same way that you go in. This way you'll miss no part of the show. Now, I've been in this business for a number of years. I've introduced a lot of strange people. People like Franklin Tinney, a man that was born with 3 legs, 16 toes, and 4 feet. Betty Lou Williams, a girl that had her baby sister growing out of her stomach. She had 3 arms, 4 legs, and 2 bodies. She died in Trenton, New Jersey at the State Fair. She was 21 years old when she died. But the attraction I have back here this afternoon is equally as strange as the two I just mentioned. Now, it is not designed primarily for the adults. But we do suggest if you go back there, you'll be of a matured nature. For the attraction will be presented the same way you see the palm of my hand. And if you want to see something bizarre, macabre, and unusual, that's what we have back there. Now, I've gotten the signal. They are ready. If you'd like to go, there is a small admission. I don't apologize for it. It's only a quarter, 25 cents. You give the quarter to Jimmy. You go in the back. There'll be no show until you come out, and you come out the same way you go in. Thank you. And you walk away, and they'd all go in for a quarter. Then they'd come out, and I'd do a little magic at the end of the thing and go outside and talk some more and fill a tent up. And that's how that one went. Any questions? Yes? What am I going to do with the dollar? Yeah, they all ask the same question. You would? I guess you would. How old are you now, son? 11? That's good. That was a good age to be at. I was never a kid. See, I had a problem. I was working very early. As a matter of fact, early in my youth, I was on the streets of New York working Chinese horn nuts, or water lilies. I don't know if you know what they are. It was a little thing that grew in China, and it looked like a bat. And it was black, and it was very light. And what we used to do is take and poke and put some shrubbery around it. And we used to take a single bloom of a gladiola and stick it in that and submerge it in water. And then you sit there, and they call them Chinese water lilies. You poke a hole in the top, one in the bottom. 3 days, you get a green sprout. Before a full week, you get one of these beautiful oriental water lilies. And they are 10 cents each or 3 for a quarter. And that's how I started in the business. I was 9 years old. As a matter of fact, there was an old guy there, an Irishman. He had the thing, and I was shining shoes at the time, and I was watching him. I was always fascinated by pitchmen. And I was watching him, and he says, "Hey, kid, you think you could do this?" I says, "Certainly, it's a snap." So I was doing that, and he went across the street to the restaurant. It said bar, I think. I'm not sure. But he's selling hot dogs. It's okay. Don't get excited. Now, and then I was sat there all day, and I did this water lily pitch. And after the water lily, the guy had come back, you know. But before he came back, a cop came up to me. He says, "That's $3, kid." So I gave him $3. And then a Mickey Mouse, that's what we used to call a patrol car in those days, he came up, and he took $3, too. So when the guy got back, he was a big, burly Irishman. He says, "Hey, kid, what'd you do?" I says, "This is it." He says, "That ain't a heck of a lot of money." I says, "No, but the cops took $6. He says, "Oh, you paid the fix." I says, "Yeah, I guess so. That's what I did." He says, "You're doing a good job, kid." He says, "Would you like to be my helper?" I says, "Certainly." So he gave me a $5 bill for the little work I did there, and I threw away the shoeshine box. I know that wasn't for me. And that's how I started. And I did that, and I got $5 and $10 and $15, depending on how the days went. And one day, he said, "I'm going over to Jersey to visit my sister. You stay here." Now, this is on 14th Street. And I stood there all day, and it was 12 o'clock at night, and you could shoot a cannon down 14th Street at that. You know, in those days, you didn't get mugged too well. But it didn't matter. But I stood there, and I said, "The heck with this jazz." I brought that stuff home, and then I came out the next day, and I kept selling horn nuts, made the fix to the cops, and kept selling. And the guy never showed up again. Now I'm running out of stock, which is those little horn nuts, and I knew there was a guy uptown selling the Chinese horn nuts. So I go up to this kid and I says, "Hey, what do you do with the horn nuts? Where do you get them?" He says, "Oh, they got a good place down in Chinatown, Hung Fong Lu's. If you got the ones that are broken, you can bring them back to them." See, they use the inside of it. It was like a walnut or a coconut, and they soak that and blow it up, and they used to eat that. So I get down to Hung Fong Lu's, and I got a few bucks in my pocket. I probably have about 100, 100 and a half. So I go to Hung Fong Lu's, and I'm 9 years old at this time. And I go in there, I says, "Got any of these water lilies?" He says, "Oh, you work the streets, huh, kid?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, they cost more money. They're 18 cents a pound." I says, "Well, give me $50 worth." He says, "Okay." So he brings a bag up. They were very light, almost like styrofoam. Brought a bag up bigger than me. And I'm walking around with this bag in the subway, and I brought it home. Now I got a lot of money. I'm doing this, and I'm giving my mother $10, $15, $20 a day because we come from a very poor neighborhood. And my mother thought I was out mugging people or stealing. So I said to Ma, I says, "Ma, I'm selling these Chinese horn nuts on 14th Street. And she says, "Don't tell me that. You're out doing something bad. I can tell nobody could get that money selling those dumb things." I says, "Ma, you got to come down and see this." So she came down there on 14th Street, and she sat there all day, clocked the joint. I mean, she looked at me all day. And she see me pay the comp off, and she see me pay the Mickey Mouse off, and she see me sell the horn nuts in the afternoon. The lunch hour was fantastic. She stood for the whole day. She wanted to be sure. He's only selling hot dogs. And my mother sat there all day, watched me taking the bucks, and she come over to me, she says, I'm not too crazy about what you're doing, but don't get yourself in trouble. That was the end of it. That's how I got into it. And then I started work, I got a few bucks, and there was a magic shop on the same street, at 34th Street, and his name was Harmon Magic Shop. His name was Al Flasso, and I was very interested in magic. So I finally sat there, and he was a funny little guy about this big, and he'd say, stay out of the back room, kid. Don't touch anything. Sit down and keep your mouth shut. You'll learn how to be a magician. And I learned a lot of magic from him. And then from there, I went to Hubert's Museum, where I was a magician, the world's youngest magician at the age of 13. And then, from there, I graduated to Coney Island, where I worked inside, got him in the back door for another quarter. Then I graduated to the outside. And by the time I was 18, I was making for a six-hour day, I was making about $450, $500 a week. And I used to work 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the season would last, right up until Labor Day. And that's how I started in the business. And then I was in nightclubs. I worked as a comic for a long time. I wanted to be the world's greatest magician, which was ridiculous. There was no money in that at that time. But finally, I made the RKO Palace. I was working at the China Door on Broadway. This is as a comic now, and we're out of Coney Island. I talk fast. A lot of times you can't keep up with it. So I'm at the China Door, and I used to produce this chicken out of a dove pan. It was a magical trick. And one day I got tape on his feet, and he started doing this number, So finally I figured out the damn chicken could tap dance. So now I'm up in the dressing room with the hand, and I'm tap dancing with this dumb chicken. Now, they tried to get vaudeville back into the Palace Theater in New York, so they seen me, and I got booked. I got booked at the Palace with this dumb chicken, and I had no music whatsoever. My mother finally bought me a tuxedo, the first new piece of clothing I ever had, I think. I got this new tuxedo, and she bought me extra underwear in case I got hit with a car. Always did that, Always change your underwear. She was ahead of the thing against that, in case you get hit with a car. I suppose when I get hit with a train, Ma, it won't matter about the underwear, but she had a thing about that. And so finally, I played the Palace, and I go into the Palace, and a friend of mine by the name of Lane, who was a pitchman also, he was a vaudevillian. I had no music. Can you imagine going to the Palace? You got the flamenco dancers ahead of me. They're applauding their keister, and I'm the next act out with this dumb chicken and this tuxedo new with the new in the underwear. And I have a packet of empty blank music paper, not a note on it. And I say to the man, I do T for two, take the natural break, and this and that and that and this. He says, why not make it easier on yourself, kid, and give me the music? And I looked down at him. I felt about this high. And he said, I said to him, I don't have any music. He says, you're kidding. He says, no. I hand him the paper. He went through every sheet of paper. If he'd seen one scratch of pencil, he would have killed me, would have stabbed me with a baton. So he finally said, okay. He handed this, give this to the drummer, give it to the saxophone player, And he says, the kid ain't got any music. Bring him on with Fine and Dandy. And by the end of the week, they had my music written for the act. The first opening day, I went through dress rehearsal pretty good. But when they put the light on me, this tuxedo my mother got was probably a bargain. It turned icky purple like it was in a window for 100 years in the sun. I looked funny before I opened my kisser. That's your mouth, lady, a kisser. And there I was. They laughed at me before I even could say anything. And now here I am with this thing. Now I am ready to open up. This is the first show at the RKO Palace. The music is pretty good. I got that squared away. The chicken tap dance is great. And now I'm afraid to go out. So they make my music. Da-da-da-da. Boom. I don't make it. Da-da-da. I don't make it. And Lane gives me a shove out onto the stage. I go flipping out like this. And his tuxedo turned purple. The guys in the band laugh so much they could hardly play the introduction again. And I tap danced with the chicken, and I did my magic act, which was very crude in those days. And that's how I got to the Palace. Yes, young man. You want to see my what? You want to see my magic act? I don't have any magic. I don't do magic. I'm a talker. See, it says American talker. See, I just rap a lot. But if I knew they wanted magic, I would have brought magic. Heck, that's easy. My father was a magician. He used to walk down the street and turn into a saloon. A hell of a guy. Everybody loved him. Yes. I tell you, is there any questions? Or do you just enjoy this rap, This is what they want. What's your question, young lady? A what kind? A geek show. There is a geek show talker here. I know how to do it, but I don't want to upstage him talking. Geek shows. You like geek shows, huh? How about girl shows? Nightmare Alley was the sort of an example of geek shows. Saturday. Well, geek shows, who does the geek show opening? You do? You want to do a geek show opening? You're going to do it at one of, in other words, I'm doing this prematurely. I'm warming up, right? Shut up. That's another talker, an old timer there. You know, they're all sitting in awe. I'm teaching them. You know, it's like, I feel like I should be around the temples. I'm doing my father's work, you know? And the last time I had this happen, it was on the side of a mountain with fishes and a loaf of bread. There's all kinds of talkers. There are girl show talkers. If you want to hear about girl show, Steve, can I do girl show openings? It doesn't matter. I can't do that. I can do a girl show opening. Let the girls are coming out in just a minute. We're going to bring out some of the fine young ladies, the female and pulcher too. All you little children, go down and buy a popcorn and go buy a hot dog. All you adults, move down and close. We're going to bring out Minnie the Mooch, the low-down hoochie-coochie, twitches it and twatches it and let you all watch it. And this little girl over here, she wears a flower on the east side, one on the west side, and one down by the South Ferry. When she starts to dance, the petals start to fall. Before you know, you'll see the entire show. You know the other word. Watch this. On the inside, you're going to see them all. We don't have any seats in here, boys. You're saying straight up. Come out here shaking hands with the unemployed. That's right. Well, that's the way they went years ago. There's a lot of kids here, and we used to get rid of the kids anyway. They'd be down there. They couldn't get near the girls' show. Then we used to do a candy pitch. I worked burlesque for a long time. And ladies and gentlemen, before the show starts, before we have the girls come out and everything, I'd like to remind you, in every two-pound box, we have enough candy in here from the Casey Candy Company to appease the appetite of any two people in the audience. But in order to further introduce this candy, in these boxes we have such valuable articles as wristwatches, lingerie for the ladies, binoculars for the men. We also have many valuable articles, but we're going to put in souvenir dice. You take the ace and you put it against the deuce, that'll give you a single figure. Put the deuce against the ace and that'll give you two figures. You move the dice, the figures start to move. Now, I'm not allowed to sell these by law, but there's no law saying I can't give them away. If I throw them out in the audience, some get five, some get ten, some get killed, some don't get any. So we're going to call this souvenir number one. We're going to put it in this box of the Casey candy with all the valuable articles, wallets with $5 bills and so forth. And then you'd send the butchers out. And they'd butcher it. There's a wallet over there. There goes a piece of lingerie. There's a pair of binoculars. The man is going to see the show. Heard that crack. Bring them back. This is when they started to get loose. You rehash them now. They called it empty box number one. And then you have some ashtray or some dumb stuff in there. Empty box number one. Who wants to buy this box? And then you'd rehash them and go out again. And then the show would start. And then I'd used to work the blackouts and the skits. And while I was working, they'd have this taffy. It was 5 million years old. And they'd throw it at you, you know. You'd stand there. And then they start throwing candy while you meet you around the corner and cheese and crackers, you know. That's the way it all went. When are we supposed to go on, Doctor? 12 o'clock? What time is it now? Aren't you glad I warmed them up for you? Where's Bradshaw? Hiya, Dr. Brad. There's the man that eats the fire, kid. And not only that, he does prestidigitation. And he has a little mouse that you have to see. And you're going to get the blades. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if there are any questions, I'm really not supposed to be here. I just got up here and warmed it up. I seen a crowd getting around here. Minute I see it now, the only thing I miss truly is getting you in the tent for a half a buck. That's the part I missed. It's almost like going out on a date and not scoring, if you know what I mean. What am I supposed to be saying this? You're not supposed to talk like that, right? Yes. Right, sir? Are you a reporter, doctor? Good. You look great. You having fun here? Did you go to all the museums and stuff? You're not having fun here. You want to get inside the show and you don't know how to get there. That's okay. Okay, who wants to take over? You want to take over, doctor? You want to get up here and talk a little bit? Here's one of the finest old talkers. It's not time yet. Okay, here comes the executives. Okay, what happened?
We're going to get all of you on stage together. We're going to have a discussion about the different kinds of pitches.
A discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you each one give an example of a different kind of pitch?
A different kind of a pitch. You want to get all of us on the stage. We have a pitchman or a doctor called Medicine Show Pitchman who does the geek show opening that you want to hear. And then we have this gentleman over here, Richard. He will come up here. He is the man that looks like George N. Cohen, a dandy. And one of the finest pitchmen in the world, actually. I'm just the wise kid up here, you know. I've only been at this thing 5,233 years. Okay. Now we're going to get... Now what's...
I was just introduced you.
You're supposed to introduce us. Set the setting. That's what. Okay, I'm going to get rid of my flea circus setting. You want to use that mic? Give me back my book. Okay. You want to use this one? And I'll use this one. I don't like the sound of this one. It's not loud enough. Okay. You got to turn them up. Okay. Hey, you are Richard. There's a little mic-y for you.
In a few minutes, I can say good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome to the American Talker section of the 1980 Festival of American Folklife. I am not a talker. We'll be introducing some of our people and explaining a little bit of the background setting of what we will be doing this afternoon. Our talkers and pitchmen are sitting on the stage now. Most all of them come from the carnival world, and I want to explain, first of all, that they're not called barkers. This may be the term that you're most familiar with, but within the carnival world, they're known as talkers. If they talk in front of a show, they're called front talkers or inside talkers if they're explaining the attractions on the inside. During the next half hour or so, we're going to have some short pitches from each one of them, and they will be able to show the variety of what they do and the wares that they and the attractions that they sell on the inside. I might explain that sideshows are generally found on what's known as the back end of a midway. You have the front end and the back end. In the front end, you'll have all the games and concessions. In the back end, you have the shows and the spectacular rides like the Ferris wheel. And in the back end on the sideshows, you have 100 feet of banners, such as the one we have behind us, that advertise the attractions on the inside. The tall rides like the Ferris wheel and the fine display of banners at the back end are what are used to pull people to the back end of the midway, past all of the games and concessionaires who try to get some of the nickels, dimes, and quarters from the visitors to the fair. But the big main attractions are at the back end of the midway. They're not always continuous shows, and that is the job of the front talker, to gather the tip, the audience. You're all the tip, and to turn the tip, to sell the tickets to get people to come on the inside. Now, to begin our show, I think this afternoon, we're going to reach back to a period of time when they had what were called geek shows. You do not see a geek show anymore, but Fred Bloodgood is with us today and during the course of the festival to talk about the Gloaming Geek Show. And I think I will briefly let him explain what a geek show is. They've really disappeared since about the Second World War. And then to give you a brief pitch for the geek show, Fred Bloodgood.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Dick. Now, as most of you know, ladies and gentlemen, anything in the carnival world that's known as a geek is a wild man or a wild girl. There's a great deal of discussion as to just exactly how wild this is. And I'm going to, as a description, I think right out of the pitch, something that I did in 1928 might give you an idea of what a geek is really like. And I would start out a pitch something like this. Ladies and gentlemen, you are now standing in front of the feature attraction of the entire midway, the home of that strange girl whom we call Neola. Now, Neola was brought here during the Great Evolution trial that took place in Dayton, Tennessee in 1925. She was examined at that time by some of our leading psychiatrists. Dr. Mullen, head of the Department of Psychiatry at Columbia University, studied upon her, claimed that she had less intelligence, I'll say less brains, than that of the chimpanzee or the monkey family. But let me paint you just a word picture of that strangest of all strange creatures. She stands about 3 or 3.5 feet tall, has long, long arms that hang way down below the knees. The eyes pop out and glare just like 2 red-hot coals of fire. But I think you'll agree with me when you see her that the most peculiar thing of all is the shape of the head. The head tapers at the top, just like that of a coconut. Now, she doesn't speak any language, doesn't know any creed, neither walks nor talks, just creeps and crawls and spends her lifetime down in that steel-bound arena, down in there now where you wouldn't expect a dog to live for an hour. She was first found by that great antiquarian, explorer, and trapper, Dr. Carter, exploring for animals in the lowlands or swamp regions of Abyssinia. He heard the strange tale of some fanatical natives, of an animal in the center of a deep, dark cave, and he investigated their story. He found it to be fact, and yet not an animal, but a human being crouched upon a huge, flat rock, just exactly as you're going to see her in there tonight, surrounded by more than 50 hissing, seething monsters, reptiles larger than a man's upper arm, some that would crush a human being with one coil from those enormous bodies, just as you or I would crush a piece of food between our teeth. And he watched her from a point of vantage. She would tease, tantalize, torment those creatures until in their wildest of fury they'd strike, biting her all over her miserable body, upon the arms, the limbs, the cheeks, even upon the tongue, until, ladies and gentlemen, the blood would actually course from those wounds, just exactly as you'd pour water from a glass. And often to avenge herself, she'd pick up one of the larger reptiles, just as you'll see her tonight, bite off the head with those long and tusky teeth, a single row of teeth on the upper jaw, a double row on the lower jaw, and you'll see her bite off the head with those long and tusky teeth, and as repulsive as it may sound, she'll peel down the skin and proceed to devour it, head, hide, tail, and all, just as you or I would eat a banana. Think of it. I realize you don't believe what I say. It's natural to doubt the word of a showman, but let me say this, and then I'm all through. If you go in there tonight and you fail to find her just exactly as I've represented, in every way, every shape, form, and manner, then I'll beg with you, I'll plead with you. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I'll implore you to come back to the pay box, and I'll refund your money just as cheerfully as I took it from you. Now, the price of admission is so low, you cannot afford to miss it. It's 25 for the adults, 10 cents for the little ones. But tonight, I'm going to turn back the pages of time. I'm going to make children out of all of you. I'm going to ask them to put away the regular adult tickets, the price of admission, for 3 minutes, and 3 minutes only. And by the way, they've been asking, what time are you going to feed her? That time has now arrived. Once on exhibition, on this very performance, I'm going to throw down deep into that steel-bound cage, that live chicken you see me there now holding. Then you're going to see a most amazing change come over that old woman. The eyes will dilate, the pupils glow just like two red-hot coals. You'll hear her emit one long, soul-searing scream, leap clear across that steel-bound cage, catch that bird between those massive jaws, bite off the head with those long teeth, and proceed to suck, drain, and draw every drop of blood from that bleeding, throbbing, quivering, pulsating body with the very same relish that you or I would suck the juice of an orange. Just think of it. Now, the price of admission, 10 cents to everybody for a period of 3 minutes only. And I'm going to feed her within the next 3 minutes, and 3 minutes only, whether one of you go, all of you go, or none of you go. And hold it, doctor, just a moment. Don't feed her just yet. She's in there now, just as you'd see her in her own native land, a live, living, genuine old human freak of nature, born to live like you or I, and actually degenerated until she's just as low, I'll say just as primitive as the most primitive beast of the jungle. There's a pay box there, a pay box there. Get tickets, go now, and miss no part of it.
You can tell by the price of admission that we don't have any geek shows anymore. Next, I want to introduce another man who has a sideshow, that one of the last of the sideshows that still tours across America playing numerous county fairs, John Bradshaw. John is going to do a mouse pitch, and I think he will explain the... All right, what? Why don't you do Otis? Okay. Yes. Why don't you explain for them what the blow-off is? Because once you're on the inside, they'll still get your money.
Yeah, everything on the front of a sideshow that's advertised, we have to show you inside. But when you get inside, the way that the sideshow owner pays his help and makes his money, especially before the fair start, when you're getting the rain and everything, is by having two extra charges. One of them is over there, a blade box, and we'll be doing that probably this afternoon. And the other one's what's known as a blow-off. And the blow-off traditionally was the last act in the show, thus you blow off the tip or the audience. It's placed behind a curtain, and it can be anything from a wax dummy to a live person, an act, a freak animal, a movie. Depends on what you want to have. And what I'm going to give you now is known as a blind opening. And this opening can describe almost anything in the world. Depending on what you have, it can cover with just a few changes any attraction back there. And sometimes the mystery is what sells it, because it's going back behind that forbidden curtain that is so enticing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll kindly do me the courtesy of coming right down to this end of the tent, your next act takes place down here. There'll be nothing taking place on that main stage while this is going on. So everyone come right down here, put one foot right in front of the other, and your next act's right down here. I thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind you that our show is continuous. No matter when you came in, you're going to see it all. Every act you saw pictured and advertised out on the front, you're going to see on that big main or center stage. But one time during each and every performance, we take a few moments out of the regular part of our show to present a special extra added attraction. You did not see this advertised. It is not part of the regular show that you bought a ticket for. We will not present it on the main stage. Instead, you're going to see it behind this curtain on a high, well-lighted platform. And behind the curtain, you're going to meet one of the strangest, one of the most bizarre, one of the most unusual human freaks of nature on public exhibition. Born into the world just a little bit different than you and I. Did I say a little bit different? A whole lot different. I want to tell you just a little bit of a story about her. It was on a dark, rainy night on a fairgrounds not too far from here. And a young mother made her way across the carnival lot heading for the sideshow. She carried in her arms a very precious little bundle, her firstborn child. She was going to the sideshow to talk to the carnival owner, the man who ran that sideshow, Mr. Carl Lawther. Now, he was a hardened man, a man who'd seen many human freaks, if you will, human monstrosities. Nothing bothered him. Nothing moved him, or so he thought. That night, the young lady walked up to the doorway of the sideshow and said, "Mr. Lawther, I have something to show you. It's my little girl." With that, she pulled back the blanket. And when he saw that child's face and that child's body, that hardened carnival sideshow owner broke down and cried. Now, that little girl is all grown up now, and she's behind that curtain on that stage. When you go back there and she removes the veil from her face and the robe from her body, I know that you'll be glad you're normal and not like she. She'll spend the rest of her life on the stage of a circus sideshow, exhibiting her strange body to the eyes of the curious. And yet, when you go home tonight, I know you'll take a moment to bow on your knee and thank the good Lord upstairs that you are indeed normal and not like she. She's a sight to see. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this being an extra added attraction, there is naturally a small extra charge, for which we offer no apologies. You'll never have a chance to see anyone like this again. If you'd like to go, the price is 50 cents, a half a dollar. With this guarantee, nothing will take place out here while you're back there. And once this is over, you come right back out into the same part of the tent to see all the rest of the show that was advertised. Now, there's the doorway. I have a lady and a gentleman there to wait on you and make change if you need change. If you'd like to go, now's the time to do so. Just push your way right through the crowd, move right on in. And once you've crossed that canvas threshold, it's like stepping into another world. And you'll see what she looks like and hear what she talks like. You'll never forget her, not to the longest day you live.
John, I want to bring you back for a brief moment to explain what can go on outside while the show is going on, and that's what's known as a continuous grind. I mentioned earlier, for those of you who were here a few moments ago, that they had the opening ballet to gather the tip, the crowd, and then to turn the tip to sell the tickets. But while the show is going on inside, they'll still try and sell tickets, and that's known as a continuous grind. And this is often done by the ticket sellers that are still out front while the show owner, the front talker, is perhaps inside lecturing. Continuous grind?
As never out is never over. You're going to see them all. Everything pictured, everything advertised. They're all real. They're all alive. They all perform. They all entertain. You meet little Otis Jordan, the frog boy, with the head of a human being, a body resembling that of a frog. He's ossified, slowly but surely, turning to stone from the neck down, yet he'll roll and light a perfect cigarette with the lips of his mouth. You'll see Jack Donahue, the human balloon, the man that allows any member of the audience to pump his stomach up with 35 to 40 pounds of solid air. You're going to see the fire eater, El Diablo, the man who drinks burning gasoline like you drink ice tea. You meet the queen of the lady sword swallowers, Miss Diana, who swallows cold steel, swords, sabers, bayonets. It's been a long time. Right down to the bottom of the well. You're going to see the human blockhead, that's Screwy Louie, the man who drives ice picks and 20-penny spikes into the center of his head with a hammer. You meet Electricia, the human dynamo, the funny old magician, the giant snakes, the jungle killers. It's never out. It's never over. They're all real. They're all alive. They all perform. They all entertain. Greatest show on earth for such little money, and it's time to go right now. It's showtime on the inside where the freaks perform. One big one admission price pays your way to all 10 big acts and attractions, and on and on and on.
Thank you, John. There are fewer and fewer sideshows on Carnival Midways. Mostly today, they're the games, concessions, and spectacular rides. We mentioned that the Geek Show is no longer around. There's another show that I've only seen once in the past several years, and that's a Motordrome. and Dick Burnett, who's been retired for a number of years but goes way back, we won't say just how far back, is going to give us a pitch for a Motordrome show. And I think he can also, just before his pitch, explain what the Motordrome is.
Yay, Richard, go ahead. Okay.
Test.
Well, actually, Motordromes, too, are dying art, unfortunately. With people going to the moon, there aren't too many Motordromes left. And here's the way it used to go. We'd have a young man, or preferably a young girl, come out and fire up a vanishing American motorcycle, an Indian or Hartley Abelson, out here on the Bally platform. It was on rollers and it was chained so it couldn't jump off into the crowd. Naturally, it didn't have any muffler, and this is the way it went. Hey, looky, hi, watch, hey, look, hi, come a-running, hey, it's going to be all free, free, free. Hey, watch what we're going to do down here at the Motordrome. Come on, crowd down in close, for goodness sakes, whenever you get something for nothing, make sure you take plenty of it. That's why I have so much money. Why, I have enough money to last me the rest of my life, providing I die before supper. All right, now watch that girl on that motorcycle. Watch her. Yes, sirree. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, come on down in close. There's nothing to be afraid of. The motorcycle is chained to the platform. It cannot get away. I'm sure you've all gone to your county fairs, and you've seen many and many a thrill show. And you sit way back up there in the grandstand, and you don't see hardly anything at all. But this show, ladies and gentlemen, you are going to see it in its entirety as though you were watching television in your own home. And you will be absolutely safe. Now, what is this show? This is Motorcycle Daredevils. Behind me is this silo. It's just like the silo back on the farm. And believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, these daredevil boys and daredevil girls will be riding these high-powered motorcycles around that wall. The dips and dives, the race for life. And I positively promise you, at one point in the performance, there will be three motorcycles on that wall where death rides at every turn of the wheel. Now, these young daredevil boys and daredevil girls, yes, I notice some of you are looking at my bent legs. How do you think they got that way? Every once in a while, they make a mistake. I, unfortunately, made a mistake. There's a wire runs all the way around there, and sometimes we hit the wire. And when we do, we go to the bottom of the pit. But you are positively safe at all times. There is absolutely no danger to you whatsoever. There goes rider number one up on the wall right now. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the price to see this show has always been $1. And I offer no apologies whatsoever because of the danger involved to these riders. And they cannot get insurance naturally. But here's what I'm going to do for this one show and this one show only. Ticket sellers, put away those rolls of dollar tickets. Listen, don't give me an argument, all right? Half a dollar tickets, children's tickets to everyone. Now line up there and line up over here. If you need change, the ticket sellers will be glad to change anything except the married lady's name. So crowd up there, racing, riding, driving, motorcycle, daredevils on the straight up and down boardwalk, just as straight up and down as the walls in your very own home, where they race, ride, and drive. Motorcycles, they're crazy people. Hey, let's go to the big show. Crowd up there. My goodness gracious, what in the world are you waiting for?
Very good, Dick. Some of you that may have gone to the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus this year may have seen one of the very few Motordrome acts that's still around. Dick, don't sit down. I want to keep you up here because we have a fat girl banner behind us, and I know that Dick does a fine pitch for a fat girl, so it's going to be most appropriate that he'll be able to point to the banner and show you what's going to be on the inside.
Why don't you allow me to make a sideshow opening and include the fat girl in it, all right?
Sure.
Get your fire.
All right. Could I have a little boy, a little girl, a volunteer? All right, come on up here. Come on, right up here.
Look out for the boys.
Now, whatever. Excuse me. Don't be frightened, okay? All right. Now, here's what we would do on a slow afternoon to build a tip, which in carnival lingo means get a crowd together. Hello, young man. I'm Commodore Dick. What's your name? Oh, come on. I'm going to make a sideshow talker out of you, young man. I want you to speak up good and loud, good and strong, so they'll be able to understand you. Now, again, say, ladies and gentlemen, my name is, and then tell them your name.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is James Long.
James what?
Long.
James Long. You don't look very long. Do you go to school, James?
Yes.
What do you take?
What
do you take in school? I don't mean steal anything. What subjects do you take?
Math, language, spelling, history.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you recite poetry? Did you ever stand up in front of the whole class and recite poetry?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Your education is being sadly neglected. Now, here. I am going to make a sideshow talker out of you. Is that fair enough, James? This is James Long. How old are you, James?
12.
12 years old, and he's going to be a sideshow talker right here this afternoon. Say, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Mary had a little lamb.
Mary had a little lamb.
She loved him very well.
She loved him very well.
She fed him a stick of dynamite.
What'd you say?
She fed him a stick of dynamite.
She fed him a stick of dynamite.
And blew him all to.
And he blew him all to pieces.
All right, James, have you ever been hypnotized, mesmerized, or highly discombobulized? Well, have you ever ran for public office?
No.
You never ran for the president of the United States? Ever run for dog catcher? Have you ever run for the city limits? Well, I have. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hypnotize you, all right? Is that fair enough? Now, don't be afraid, okay? What I want you to do, I want you to lie right down right here, okay? Okay, right. All right, crowd down in close now if you want to see how this is done. Come on down in close. All right, don't tear loose the microphone, please. All right, lay right down like a Georgia mule. Back down a little bit right here. All right, back down in a little foot. All right. Say, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I am going. On a far-off journey.
On a far-off journey.
Into the land of oblivion.
Into the land of the oblivion.
Where the angels tread. That have no wings. Now, where is that, James? Up above or down below?
Up above.
They don't have any wings, James.
What do you mean? What do you want me to say?
They don't have any wings.